We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that three-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Wake that ass up
in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Yep, and we got a special guest in the building today. Ladies and gentlemen, the mayor.
Mayor Eric
of New
Adams
York City,
is here.
Eric Adams.
And we have we also have lawyer and political commentator Oluyemi Olorun here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. What's
How
happening?
You feeling, Mayor?
Good. You know, even before we get into the conversation, I was with Jordan the other day, my son, and somehow your name came up. Mm-hmm. And there was a group of young people in the room talking about politics. It's amazing how so many people are into politics now. And they came up with saying something about, there were people saying that how you were trying to push Trump. And so Jordan pulled up this video, one of your shows, mm-hmm. where you broke down each time you were talking about what was wrong about his race.
Absolutely.
And just broke it down piece by piece. And Jordan said, Dad, you know what? Truth doesn't matter anymore with folks. People don't care about truth.
Nobody cares about
they
the truth.
They don't care about facts. Facts no longer exist.
I've never pushed Trump. I actually do the opposite.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But we are in a generation where everyone gets up in the morning, look on social media, and whatever's on there, they identify it as the facts.
The headlines.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. No one goes into the body of the story. Everybody's just, well, you know what? This is what the headlines say, and that's the reality of it. And so it was like an eye-opener for him mm-hmm. of how... I said, Jordan, for over and over again, that one moment took away all those years of me saying, have your own facts. That's Don't right. let anybody define for you. You define for yourself.
That's right.
You know, and that's the power of this microphone. That's mm-hmm. the power of media.
Absolutely.
Putting those facts out. If we don't control the message will control us.
Well, we got a lot to talk about today.
A lot.
Your city. So
yes.
Today we reported earlier about congestion pricing, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What's your thoughts on that? I think it's gonna cripple New York City. You got a lot of people. The bridges already, the tolls already high. It's $17, I think, for George Washington, $11 for the Midtown tunnels. Parking is extremely high. And now getting into the city, it's gonna hurt a lot of people to even drive in the city. And
people are scared of the subways, you know, with everything been going on, people getting, you know, pushed into the train stations, crime, and people are scared of New York City.
Well, that's so. A lot. Let's unpack. Let's do the first one first. Why is the congestion pricing happening?
You've been holding on to a lot.
I have.
You've been holding on to a lot. So, but let's break it down for a moment. Let's break it down in pieces so we can really understand it. First, let's deal with the stuff about people are scared of the subways. When I became mayor, no one wanted to be on the subway. We got over 4 million daily riders. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a sister the other day, and she said, you know, we have about 200-300 crimes happening on the subway system. We have 6 felonies a day on our subway system out of 4 million riders. Mm-hmm. Look at those numbers. Mm-hmm. Our subway system is a safe system, and we put in additional 1,000 officers to do the high visibility to deal with the reality, because safety is not only felt, it's perceived. Mm-hmm. Those 6 felonies, we got to get rid of. We're clear on that. But people are back on our subway system. But when you deal with specifically congestion prices, a lot of people don't realize these are the city streets, but we had no authority on it. Mm-hmm. Albany passed a law and turned it over to the MTA. This is the MTA's baby. They should have allowed the city to be able to control how congestion pricing was done. So that $15, we were able to fight to get $100 million to deal with the environmental impact in the Bronx. We were able to fight to get those who are shift workers to get a discount, those who make less than $50,000 to get a discount. But this was a bill that came out of Albany.
So you don't agree with it, or do you agree with it?
No, I agree we got to deal with something with the congestion in our city, but you don't pass on the cost of that on low income New Yorkers, mm-hmm. or those who have to come to Manhattan. You may have to have going to your chemotherapy, and this is the doctor you have to go to. You should not be hit over the head because
People that live in the area, they're saying that people that actually live in the area, when they drive, if they got to drive uptown to the doctor or they got to drive, they get charged too.
I'm not feeling people that live in the area. Mm-hmm. Central Manhattan, south of 60th Street, has the best transportation system on the globe. You got crosstown trains, you have south and north trains, you have buses that go across town. There's no place else on the globe that you have the greatest access to public transportation than people south of 60th Street. So I'm not feeling them. Mm-hmm. If they're saying that, you know, we don't want to pay, you know what, you need to get on the train. I take the train, you know, so you can get on the train. I'm talking about low-income New Yorkers should not have to carry the burden of that. And we ask to have more and a greater input and the shaping of that, but we don't. People don't often realize we're creatures of Albany. Albany passed the laws. We have to implement the laws that are down here.
I think you're right that there is a difference between perception and fact and how people feel about safety and the way people feel about the subways. And I think it's your own rhetoric about the subways that has a lot to do with why people feel scared, despite the fact that millions of people ride the subway every day without incident. But you've continued to fearmonger about crime in the subways. You've added 2,000 police officers, despite the fact that you've acknowledged that the subways are not that dangerous. And I think you're right. And poor New Yorkers should not be the ones who bear the brunt of this, but they will if they already have the subway being turned into a place that they have to fear, that there's a National Guard, that there's a hyper visibility of police, that they're trying to stop people with certain records from even using them, and now you have this congestion price. So how do you reconcile that?
Well, let's go before. First of all, I would love to give me the quotes on my rhetoric, because I'm lost on that. Can you give me the quotes?
Oh, that you fearmonger about the subways?
Yeah, give me
you've consistently done that. Since the day one of your administration, one of the first things you did was add 1,000 officers to the subway because you claimed that the subways are unrideable. You and Hochul did this and said how dangerous it is, and you recently did that when you deployed the National Guard.
Sister, but that wasn't my question, Queen. My question was, what was my fear-mongering? What did I say?
You continuously say, I could point to a number of videos and quotes and everything from you, but you've said repeatedly that the subways are dangerous, that New York is dangerous. You complain about crime relentlessly. So what I'm saying to you is, if you are saying that New York is the safest city, it's one of the safest big cities in this country, which is true, and you're recognizing that the subway stations are, in fact, not half as dangerous as they're presented to be, I'm saying, how do you reconcile how your rhetoric has played into people's fear?
Okay. And not even just rhetoric, I would say the actions, because she's right. If you tell us
which is different.
But it's the same thing, though. If you put 1,000 police officers in the subway, 2,000 mm-hmm. police officers in the subway, that don't make us feel safe. We think something's wrong if you're doing
that. Let me peel back again, because you got to always peel back this stuff, you know, because oftentimes how you depict in the media that I don't control is how people interpret you. I didn't put the National Guards in the subway. The governor did.
I know, but I know what you said.
But you said, Eric.
You stood with Governor Kathy Hochul and you co-signed that decision. You did. And I'm not saying this as someone who's following social media. I'm saying that as an attorney in the city and an activist who follows everything that you do.
Yeah, if you, I'm glad you do. Because then you'll realize how I turned the city around if you follow everything I do. You'll realize
I would say no, but we could get to that next.
Loosen up your time, man, Adam. It'll be a long day.
And I enjoy every moment
of it. That's right.
You know, because this is what I do. Right. You know, when you come with a serious history, if you follow everything you know, I do, you know how long I've been doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what my record is.
Mm-hmm.
So let's peel back what you just stated. When fear is perceived and felt,
mm-hmm.
that's what fear is.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter, as I shared, that we have 6 felony crimes a day with 4 million riders, if people feel unsafe, when we get in the subway system, I ride the subway system and I talk to commuters and I say, what are you feeling and how do I help you with that fear? They say, Erica, we see more visible uniform officers in our subway system. We're going to feel safer. We got it. Oh, let me, can I
peel you can talk. You okay. Can peel it back.
We got it that the numbers are down. We got it that we're back on the subway system post-COVID. But when we see, this is what the public is saying, when we see the visible presence of a uniform officer, we feel safer. Now, you may say, Eric, I don't want to see a visible presence of a uniform officer. And that's cool. But that's not what the overwhelming number of New Yorkers are saying.
And I'm saying to you, the New York City Comptroller, Brad Lander, recently put out a report finding that 50% of the city is disappointed and does not feel safe based on your rhetoric about the subways and your over-police presence.
Okay, well, sister, first of all, that's not what this says based on Eric's rhetoric. That's not, you keep
they,
using...
No.
Did they say based on Eric's rhetoric?
Do you want to talk about based on your specific...
No, sister, I'm going back to what you said because you're an attorney. You
they
deal
have.
With facts. Did they say based
yes,
on Eric Redding?
They have. The city is... They have multiple reports. The New York Times, the Gothamist, the city comptroller, and the federal monitor who reports, who's tasked with making sure that NYPD and Rikers are in compliance with the law, have both submitted reports saying that since you became mayor, there's been a return of stop and frisk, that there have been over 15,000 stops, 97% of whom have been on Black and Hispanic people. A fourth of those stops and searches have been unconstitutional, and they've yielded very few results.
Let's peel it back. Eric Adams, 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement, testified in federal court that the federal court judge stated, based on Eric's testimony, we are going to rule against the police department. We were dealing with 1 million stops a year when I was with 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement. My advocacy is what turned it around from that 1 million stops a year. Look at the numbers right now.
I am
so
looking at the numbers.
My advocacy and showing how to do policing correctly. Because it's not that you want to eradicate proper police practices. You must make sure they do them right. And mm-hmm. that is what I have been able to accomplish in this city, taking over 13,000 guns off the streets of the city of New York, who the victims are Black and brown people. When I go to community meetings and talk to community residents, they don't tell me, Eric, we don't want more police. They say, Eric, we want our police doing their jobs mm-hmm. correctly. And mm-hmm. that is what I'm doing.
The federal monitor, who is tasked with ensuring that NYPD is following the law, conducted an analysis that happened 8 years ago, but they're still here monitoring what you're doing, and they said that you have brought back stop and frisk policies that are worse than they saw even during the Bloomberg era. But more importantly, they analyzed the neighborhood the report
said,
is available, and I know it's been available to you because your spokesperson has commented on it. They did an analysis of over 10 precincts.
You can't keep putting
10
out
different precincts.
That
is factual. There's a federal monitor reporting to Judge T. Swain on it and presenting
and what,
information. Let me finish so you can peel it back. They conducted an analysis of 10 different precincts
mm-hmm.
and of the stops of 10 different precincts, they found that 97% of them, by the way, of the neighborhood safety teams that were disbanded in 2020 because of their disproportionate abuse against Black and Hispanic people that you revived, they analyzed 10 of those different neighborhood safety teams and found that they're conducting 97% of their stops on Black and brown people, and a quarter of them are unconstitutional. That's what the federal monitor said, not me.
Yeah. And at the same time, let's be clear on this, because what you're giving the perception of, this is a federal monitor that came in long before I was mayor. Can
yes,
we agree on that?
Yes,
okay,
they monitor NYPD, not you specifically.
Two,
you're
right,
the mayor.
Right. Number two, I have been the mayor for 2 years and 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a tradition of over-policing for generations.
And they said it's worse now that you're here.
That I fought for. We had issues of over-policing for generations that I fought for.
Mm-hmm.
We acknowledge what my history is in this place. So 2 years... In 3 months, we are turning around not only over policing, but we're turning around the crime. Because when I came to this city, we had a 40% increase in crime. And most of that crime, black and brown communities. Black
you became mayor after a global pandemic in which there was record unemployment, business loss, homelessness,
exactly.
And you're not drawing that connection
exactly.
to it. You're making no. But what I'm saying is crime is connected to what is happening in the city and the experiences of people. This is the most expensive city in the world. We had a global pandemic where businesses closed
exactly.
and people out of work. So if you saw crime, it was connected to that. But you're saying
level
also
private sector jobs. Come on.
Also, you're saying that you've turned it around, NYPD's abuses. But just last year, we paid out $150 million. In settling police misconduct
right.
from
and
NYPD, and that was double the number. That's double the number in police
yeah,
misconduct
but,
since you became mayor.
I noticed something. I noticed how much passion and commitment you have.
It's one of your constituents.
Right. Yeah, and I'm one of my constituents too now. Right. You know what I'm saying? And I grew up in the city. I noticed, and this is what I hear often of those who articulate when a person in a blue uniform commits an inappropriate act. Balance that with what we're doing to take the violence out of our communities. Because I know what I hear when I go to these community meetings. I know what I hear when I go speak to these mothers who lost their children to violence. I know what I hear. You are not even talking about that at all.
You know, first of all, I was a public defender.
New Yorkers don't feel safe.
But that's what you said. That's what you said.
And my original question was about how you relate to that.
You said that New Yorkers don't feel safe.
Yeah. So there was a poll that came out with last week.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And in that poll that came out by the CBC, it stated that the priorities of Mayor Adams is moving the city in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
My priority. Now, remember, 2 years, 3 months, brother. 2 years, 3 months. I inherited a pandemic. I inherited 180,000 migrants and asylum seekers that can't work, that we have to house them every day. I inherited.
You called for a lot of them too, though.
No, we didn't, brother.
You said it was a sanctuary city. You told them.
Okay, let's see. That's why it's important. That's why it's important to have this conversation, because sanctuary city and the migrants and asylum seekers are two different issues. Sanctuary city is you're undocumented. We can't turn you over to ICE or authority.
Mm-hmm.
Migrants and asylum seekers were paroled into here. They're here legally. They were paroled into. But what the federal government did and Governor Abbott did, they said, we're going to send them up to Chicago, New York, Boston. And the federal government is saying, Eric, you can't allow them to work. You got to give them housing. You can't stop the buses from coming in. You cannot turn them over to ICE. All of that is illegal. If I do that, we'd be breaking law. Mm-hmm. So when people look at the migrants that are here, we didn't call people to come here. They were sent here by Governor Abbott. And the failure to secure our borders is allowing this to continue. And we're not getting any money from. We got about $100 million out of a $4 billion price tag. Look at Chicago right now. Look at what's happening in Chicago right now. My brother, Mayor Johnson, over there, what's happening with him. Look what's happening in Boston. Look what's happening in Houston, Los Angeles. And then do a comparative analysis of what's happening on our streets here. Wow, we dealt with that crisis, turn around our economy, outpacing the state in reading and math of our young people. I've been on Rikers Island more than any mayor in the history of the city, talking with inmates and correction officers to turn around what's happening on Rikers Island.
I know
Island.
You go to Rikers in 2022 when there were 3 deaths back to back because corrections officers left their posts and allowed it to happen. You went to Rikers to express your support for the corrections officer. I know you go to Rikers.
Mayor Adams. But you keep giving out misinformation.
It's not misinformation, Mayor Adams. I'm quoting the
monitor. I was on Rikers Island this week,
mm-hmm.
this week,
mm-hmm.
with a group of 12 young brothers who recommitted themselves to Christ. I went to see them in the morning. We prayed together because they said, this is not the first time you've been here. You've been here over and over, visiting us, talking to us, nurturing us, you know, because I know what it's like to be locked up, because I was locked up as a child.
I know you were.
So I know what it's like to be treated unfairly because I'm dyslexic. When you do an analysis of the number of young brothers and sisters who are in Rikers or in jail, they're dealing with learning disabilities because they were never given the support that they have. That's why I have dyslexia screening, so we can catch people who are thrown overboard before they get thrown overboard. So we have a philosophical disagreement.
I'm glad that you brought up
your
Rikers.
Feelings towards, your feelings towards police is different from mine.
These are not my, your this is not about my feelings to the police. This is about the actual statistics that I presented from the federal monitor monitoring with you.
What do you say about her statistics, though? Because, I mean, these are statistics.
These are federal monitor. Do you, are you disputing with the federal monitor and the actual, and the controller?
Think about this for a moment. Controller Brad Lander. Okay, please. If we're going to throw people in names on who we are independent sources, he should not be one of them. Think about this federal monitor.
The one that was independently elected by the people of New York, placed there?
But I was independently elected also.
And we've been there, and I'm addressing you.
So think about this for a moment. The federal monitor wants to take over Rikers, okay? Rikers has been dysfunctional for generations. Mm-hmm. I came in, decreased violence, put in real incentive programs for young people there, but I didn't do it from a distance. I went to Rikers and walked the halls and talked with inmates. We're doing workshops and support groups with inmates and find out, what do you need to be here? We instituted real turnaround programs there with the sisters that's now in the correction officer. I mean, that's the commission of correction there. So I didn't do like other mayors. I didn't sit back and say, let me just turn my back on what's Rikers. I said to those Rikers inmates when I got elected, I'm coming here, I'm going to see what you're going through, and want to make sure you leave here better than how you got here in the first place. And we started instituting programs to do so. So that same federal monitor, go look at the federal prisons. That federal monitor wanted to take over our prisons after I had it only 2 years and 3 months. No, they wanted to take over my first year, although crime was going, violence was going down. And people say, well, Eric, you know, people are dying on Rikers. Look at how they die. People are coming into Rikers in terrible medical conditions.
And not getting their medical appointments.
It's not that they were dying because correction officers were killing them. People were coming in with heart problems.
But they were
overdosing on drugs.
When will people in Rikers start to feel that? Because I know I got people that are in Rikers right now serving time, and they hate it. They think it's disgusting. They're trying to raise awareness to it.
Who likes jails, brother? Who likes jails?
Respectfully, Mayor Adams, fundamentally, the things that you are saying is untrue. You actually cut $17 million that were used for classes for people at Rikers to reenter society. Those were cut under your
administration. Check out the programs.
Those were cut under your administration.
We were spending millions of dollars.
31 people have died at Rikers since Eric Adams became mayor.
Millions of dollars for these professional folks who do these programs, reentry programs, millions of dollars, 7 people sitting inside the class. When I came into office, I said, wait a minute, why are we spending so much money on programs, but our people are still in these bad conditions? People have profitized poverty. They're making so much money off of black and brown people because it's a lucrative business to come up with all these different programs, all these different ways. And then when you go to them and say, let me see the results of the programs that we're paying you millions of dollars for. And then you look and see, well, who's in charge of these programs? They don't look like us.
Moments ago, you said you instituted programs. And when I brought up the fact that you actually cut programs, now you're anti-program. Okay, 31, at least 31 people have died at Rikers since you became mayor. That's why they're pushing for a receivership.
Fatherless No More program. Fatherless No More. This was the brother, the pastor. Fatherless No More is called the program. I would encourage you to come and check it out. This brother here, instead of saying, pay me millions of dollars to do a program to turn around the lives of our young brothers in Rikers, he doesn't want money. He's committed to the cause. But you have these professional programs that were in place. And when I went to them and say, show me the results of what you've done in these programs. Show me what we produce for our millions of dollars. As in many of these programs in the city that I'm saying, we're no longer paying y'all to just play us year after year. So Fatherless No More is turning around the lives of people, not being paid millions of dollars for it. If we're really true to what we say we want to do, why do we have to pay you millions of dollars to do it? You know, why don't you come on Rikers like I do and volunteer? Why don't you come and really be committed? Because people are not committed to us, brother. They've been playing us. You know, this is a street hustle that have been going on for years. And people have eaten off of the dysfunctionality of watching us stay in these permanent states of being.
A lot of people are upset, too. And they feel like the prison reform is bad for New York City. They're saying people do crimes, they get out immediately, and then they commit the crimes. We just seen an officer that passed away a couple of days ago. Rest in peace to him. And always healing energy to his family. But they say that individual was arrested for a gun and has a record the size of we don't know what. And they're saying that people are doing crimes and they're getting back out. Officers don't want to arrest people. A lot of officers don't even want to be officers anymore because the people that they're arresting get out so fast. So what do you say to that?
And brother, let me tell you something. I say this term all the time. Idealism collides with realism. Mm-hmm. This far leftist mindset that believes we should not have a criminal justice system in place, mm-hmm. we're going to look like some of these other cities that you're seeing with a lack of a criminal justice system in place. We're losing correction officers. Mm-hmm. We're losing district attorneys. We're losing police officers. We're losing probation officers. We're losing school safety agents. Every piece of our public safety apparatus that the everyday working class person wants, mm-hmm. we're seeing it all of a sudden erode. And we're going to lose the foundation of our prosperity, and that's public safety. So when you look at these cases, we have three problems in this city that if you dig into it, you'll see how they continue to intersection between each other.
What are they?
We have one, we have a recidivist problem.
This is not
true. It's a revolving door. 38 people that assaulted transit workers were arrested 1,100 times. 545 people that were arrested for shoplifting were arrested 7,500 times. The person who shot that police officer, his driver, was just arrested for having a gun in April of last year. Now he's back doing the same thing all over again. These guys are arrested 10, 15 times. It's a small population of people that are repeated offenders. The second problem that we have in the city is a severe mental health problem. I'm not talking about just somebody that's depressed, someone that's going through a bad day. I'm talking about a severe mental health problem. Go look at these cases of assaulting passengers, pushing people on the subway track. The cat that pushed the person on the subway track the other day, in and out of the system. Mm-hmm. And so when I came into office, I said, we can't keep just walking by these people that are dealing with severe mental health issues. We need to give them wraparound services and care. The far left pushed against me.
Oh, my
gosh. You're inhumane. You just want to take people off the streets. I said, no. In this city, people are not going to live in encampments. They're going to live in tents. Go look at Los Angeles. Go look at Oregon. Go look at all these other cities where you see tent cities, San Francisco. You see tent cities. People, when I went out in January and February when I got elected in 2022, I went out without my security team and started visiting people in tents and encampments and started talking to them. Bipolar, schizophrenic, human waste, drug paraphernalia, stale food. They didn't even realize they were in that state. One cat was an ex-police officer that I spoke with, didn't even realize, started seeing and talking to himself. I said, I'm not going to do this. My city's not going to be like San Francisco. It's not going to be like these other cities where you're watching people living on streets in tents and tents. You don't see that in New York City. Third problem we have is random acts of violence. Those random acts of violence are being highlighted. If you have 24 hours in a day and something that happens to you in an hour in a day, you start to define yourself as that entire day. Those random acts of violence are plastered on social media. They're plastered on
NYPD Twitter page.
They're plastered on everything. People begin to believe that, I'm living in a city that's out of control. We are not.
She made a good point, though. If NYPD is reposting that kind of stuff, what are we supposed to think?
I said at the beginning.
Everybody got a phone, brother.
NYPD's page is doing this. This has recently been there, so much so that they're arguing with journalists on there. It's NYPD on their own Twitter pages that are posting and sensationalizing crime. And I said this at the beginning. You said that there's a difference between perception and reality, how people feel afraid versus how safe New York actually is. And I agree with you, but I said that it's your own rhetoric and NYPD's rhetoric that plays into that. And you did it just now, because the reality is a condition of release for everybody, for every crime, whether it be non-bail eligible or bail eligible, is that if you commit a crime and you're rearrested, that you bail can and will be set on you. So that's the first thing. Second of all, they have conducted multiple studies, but the Brennan Center literally just put out one. Less than 2% of anybody in New York City that's released on bail is rearrested for any violent crime. More importantly, in the same breath that you want to sensationalize, we want to highlight and point out, an officer was killed the other day, which is a rare occurrence across the United States, but let alone in New York. New York police officers have killed at least 7 people this year, including a 19-year-old in Queens yesterday.
I'm not going to dismiss the loss of a life of an innocent person that wears a uniform to protect us.
But you do, of the 31 people dead at Rikers,
a rare
and the 19-year-old killed yesterday.
I feel like I don't want to take you out of context, and I don't want people to all of a sudden criticize that you're being dismissive of a young man being shot and killed.
That's not going to work on me.
I'm not trying to work anything on you. I lost a member of the police department the same way I go to see the mother of 11-month-old baby that was shot in the head when I first became man. I sat in a hospital with her. The same way I go visit these mothers who lose their children to gun violence, I go see them.
Yes, but this not
the- We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth, so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
How do we level the playing field for all entrepreneurs? 55% of white businesses survive the startup phase, while only 4% of black businesses do the same. So I want every black entrepreneur to know about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have black ownership. This program gives black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million black businesses initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
AT&T connects and ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that three-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Others, the people are dying in Rikers.
Just as I go Just as I go to see the family member of a slain police officer, I go visit those parents that lose their loved ones to violence.
Are you visiting the family of the...
Do you do that?
First of all, yes, I did. I held a Riker. I represented hundreds...
You went to visit the family member of a slain officer?
No, not the slain officer.
Okay, of course you
did. No, but what about the 19-year-old that was killed yesterday by NYPD in Queens when he called for help? Have you said anything about that? Are you visiting them?
Yeah, first of all,
York safer or not, Mayor?
I'm sorry.
Is New York safer or not?
Okay, we just showed the graph that we put up, right? There's a graph that shows how many murders based on 100,000 people. It shows a graph each city, the large cities in America. New York is the least. New York is the safest big city in America.
Should we say crime is down, or should we say it's safe? Because I think it's a difference between saying crime is down and saying something is safe.
And say, well, random acts.
If I'm 330 pounds and I lose 30, I'm still fat.
right.
You know what I'm saying?
But random acts of violence. That's why. What I must do with New Yorkers is give them the facts, not give them what people are spewing out there. The facts are clear. As I've always stated, we are the safest big city in America. And as people talk about reporting the reports that come out and reporting how things are done, no one wants to report the fact that everyone is saying across the globe, New York is the safest big city in America.
Are we trending the right way, Olayemi?
I don't dispute that New York is safe. What I dispute is how Mayor Adams' own rhetoric is the reason why people don't feel safe. New Yorkers don't feel safe because of the way that NYPD, the Post, and Mayor Adams go about sensationalizing crime, and I'm asking you to talk about it differently.
And you have a right to your opinion and your belief. You and I have a philosophical disagreement.
It's not about the philosophical disagreement.
Many people on the far left disagree with me. You know, many people on the far left, they say, Eric, people should be allowed to sleep on the streets no matter what. They should be allowed to sit on your stoop and inject themselves with drugs. They should be allowed to go in stores and steal whatever they want. They shouldn't have to pay on the subway system. They should be allowed to carry a gun and be able to come out the next day. Like, people disagree with me all the time.
Earlier you asked me to point out the rhetoric. Earlier you asked me to point out specifically what you say to fairmonger about crime, so I just would like to say, Exhibit A, like what you literally just did. You continue to say in this that New York is the safest big city while simultaneously you are the one sensationalizing the crime.
All I know is when I came in office and I stated that I wanted to take, I'm not allowing people to sleep in tents on our streets. They're going to get the care that they deserve. The far left attacked me.
No, we attacked you because you made it so that people could be involuntarily committed.
If I'm sitting down with you, brother, and I'm in a tent with you or an encampment, and I'm seeing human waste in the corner, I'm seeing stale food, I'm seeing drug paraphernalia, and I'm hearing you talking about you only here until the spaceship comes to take you to your next planet. You need to be involuntarily committed.
Didn't I just say about sensationalized kinds of stories? No, this is what I
saw. This is what I saw. This is what I saw.
You were there? Because the activists that were actually there at the encampments you had torn down, you weren't there, but they were there when they were being arrested.
People are also upset that they feel like too much money is going to migrants and you're cutting too many programs, right? They're saying you're cutting the pre-K funding.
$170 million
They're
in
saying
funding.
That you're cutting so many different funding for
Love
other
that.
People.
Love this question, brother.
People are feeling like, you know, they never have money for us, but as soon as migrants come in the country, they find money.
And listen, people have a right to be angry. You know who's even more angry than they are? I am. I've been to Washington 10 times. 10 times to talk about this subject. So people got a right to be pissed off of what they're doing to New York City.
How can we
New
fix
York-
that where these, like, I mean, we cut a lot of programs.
$170 million
in pre-K. But hold on, let's talk about that.
Kids couldn't go to school because migrants took over the school.
That wasn't accurate.
Okay, break
it down. Let's deal with that. We always utilize our school buildings during the time of crisis. And if we're saying to ourselves, if there's some amazing, when we had the major fire when I first became mayor and we saw that fire in the Bronx.
In the Bronx, yeah.
You know, we had to take a school to take care of those people who lived in the building temporarily. When we have major storms, we take a school to use it temporarily. Schools is part of the resources of the city. And thank God we have something called remote learning where people still let young people still able to go on to learn.
But
we can't say that we will use a school building during an emergency, but we're not going to do it for children that are migrants and asylum seekers.
You publicly oppose remote learning and remote work.
Here are the things that are crucial about the migrant asylum seekers that we need to put to rest that people don't realize. Number one, I don't have the legal authority to stop the buses from coming in. That's against law. I don't have the authority to allow them to work, which they want to do. That's against the law. I don't have the authority to say, I'm not going to house you and give you three meals a day. It's against the law for me to do it. I don't have the authority to deport someone that commits a crime here in this city and turn them over to ICE. That's against the law. So what we had to do was figure out, how do we house people? And so some people said, well, Eric, you're giving them more than what you're giving us. Go to the HERC centers where they are, the shelters. Their restrooms are outside. Their showers are outside. They're sleeping on cots. They get three basic meals a day. And when I go visit them, they say, we don't want any of this from you. All we want to do is have the right to work so we can provide for ourselves.
Well, in less than 30 days, migrants won't be allowed to work per federal guidelines, and they won't be allowed to be housed in NYC anymore. So where will they go after that?
They're finding their way. Mm-hmm. Out of the 184,000, 60% of them found their way, like many of us have done. You notice you don't hear about the
where they gonna get housing in 30 days though?
Many of them, we giving them intense care. We're not just telling you come here, hang out for 30 days, and we're not gonna help you. No, in those 30 days, and if you're a young person, you get 60 days. But in those 30 days or 60 days, we're giving you intense care. We're showing you how to find your way in our city. We're showing you how to go about applying for housing, how to go about applying for the services that you need. And some people are saying, we never wanted to come to New York at all. Mm-hmm. We wanted to come to another city. But Governor Abbott said, no, we're sending you to New York. Think about this for a moment. We got thousands of Ukrainian migrants. Thousands. Do you hear about them? No. Cause they could work.
Just Mexican and Africans are the only ones.
Cause they
could
work. They have the right to work. So we wouldn't even be having this conversation if we gave them the authority to work. And you know the real irony of this? We need workers. I need lifeguards. I need food service workers. Many of these migrants from Venezuela are nurses and other professionals. I need people to be backstretch workers. Other states are telling me, Eric, we will take the migrants and asylum seekers if they just allow them to work. We're not going to take them and just have them sit around every day. If they're allowed to work, we would take them.
I agree with the national government.
She agrees with you.
I agree with you that migrants should be.
She agrees with a lot of stuff.
I trust you that I do not believe she's on that train. I'm sitting here, Mayor Adams.
She's going to be dialing 911.
First of all, I ride the subway every day. I've worked as a public defender in this city and represented thousands of people.
You're
so please spare me. No, I'm not.
Do you think more police make people feel safe, especially black and brown people?
No, they don't.
No, black and brown people?
Yes, brother.
I just had a town hall yesterday.
All these black and brown folks inside that town hall. Number one issue they came up with. We want to feel safer. We want more cops on our corners.
People want to feel safer. It doesn't mean they want more cops. And if they did, New York City has the most police in the country. We have the largest police department in the country. How many more police do you want, Mayor Adams?
You go do an analysis across this city in communities of color and ask them.
I live in Flatbush.
Do you want us to take your police away or do you want more police? I guarantee you, you would be lost to find someone in these communities.
What about when you add resources to that list? Do you want more resources to get to the root of these issues?
That's what people want.
Think about the resources. Think about the resources we've done. Check out what we've done. Advocates, the far left, they have been calling for summer youth employment for years. We gave them 100,000. Never been done before in history. Never. They've been calling for investment in NYCHA. We put NYCHA as our top program. When I was doing COVID, I was knocking on doors, handing out masks to NYCHA residents because the city refused to do so. And people were saying, why are you giving masks to those people? When I was knocking on the doors, I would ask the residents, how are your children doing in school? They said, Eric, we don't even have high-speed broadband. I said, when I get elected, we're going to change that. Now NYCHA residents all have free high-speed broadband so their children can have access like other children. We are doing the NYCHA Land Trust. No one was able to do it. We put more people in affordable housing using the voucher system than the history of the program. We've transitioned more people out of shelter into housing in one year in the history of the city. When I went to do an analysis with all of my gang members and I asked them the question, you know, how many of you have learning disabilities? How many of you are dyslexic?
And all of your gang members?
There's a lot.
That's what you, that's I, what you, I mean, that's what you
decided
to characterize them?
With people who
you,
are...
You kick it with the gangs?
Folks want, okay. I mean regularly with people who...
You met up with some drug dealers at Burger King.
I'm glad you brought that up. Hold on, let me just finish this one piece because this is important. We noticed when we did the analysis across the country, not only in New York, across the country, 30 to 40% of the inmates in jail and in prison have a learning disability. So when I sat down with the chancellor, I said, listen, we can't wait until people until people break the law. We did dyslexia screening in our schools, and we were able to now catch it and give them the wraparound services they need. So I want to talk about Burger King. So I'm sitting at home, and I look in the paper. They say there's drug dealers selling drugs in front of Burger King. So I call up the precinct commander. And I said, what is this, man? We're not having open drug markets. He says, Mayor, we did a complete operation, buy and bus, went to see, you know, what drugs are they selling, who's selling drugs. He said, these guys are not selling drugs. These guys are homeless, and they just come to feel as though they could be around others. So when I went on Sunday, I went down and did what other people don't do. I spoke with them. Mm-hmm. I said, brothers, can we sit down and talk? Let me find out how, you know, what's going on in your lives. We sat in Burger King, had a conversation. Sharp brothers.
So they weren't even drug dealers?
No.
Okay.
They were not drug dealers. They were just homeless brothers that just wanted to be a place where people, they could commune among others, like other folks do. When people have dog parks and people sit on the steps of a museum. And so we sat there and had a conversation, and we were able to identify what services. And what I learned from them, you could have all the services you want. But if people don't know the entry ramp to those services, then what good is it? Mm-hmm. So now we're going to devise a program that they're going to help me devise on how to reach out to those services. Then I want those brothers to become recruiters to go inside the shelters. But you're not going to do that if you are afraid to get on the ground and have these one-on-one conversation. I've been here, man. You know, I know what it is to buy a nickel bag and make eight joints so mommy can feed herself. I know what it is to run numbers.
Yeah,
I know what it is
up.
To do all those things. So I'm comfortable among my folks. And the problem that a lot of people don't understand is they don't know how authentic I am about this work. But they're going to look back over it and say, we had a mayor that came from us and delivered for us. Even the billions of dollars that I'm putting into MWBEs that we've never had before. People are going to look back over these years and say, this brother was real about what he's doing, because that's why I'm doing it.
I see you people wrapping up. I have two more questions. How do debit cards for migrants compare to New York City welfare benefits?
I like that. That's a good question, because that was one of the biggest myths. And I think the Daily News just did a piece today of saying why this makes sense. So here's what happened. We were paying people, because by law, we got to feed them three meals a day. We got to feed the migrants three meals a day. When I told the team we got to bring down the cost of this by 30%, because it was costing us too much money, $12 billion over 3 years, $4 billion already. One of the places was food. We were seeing that we were having a 10% food waste. People were getting food that they didn't want, and they discarded. So my team came together, first deputy mayor Sheena Wright, first black woman to be a first deputy mayor. She came up with a team called Mokify, an MWBE, black product. They said that we can give people food cards where they can only purchase food and baby supplies. You will save $600,000 a month in costs. People will buy the food that they want and not giving it to them from someone from some large conglomerate. Then they will have to spend the cards in the bodegas, the supermarkets, the local stores, so the money stays inside the community. And the program is run by a person of color. We're saving over $7 million a year. We have no more food waste because people are buying what they want. It's a black-owned company, so we put money back into a black businesses, like I said I was going to do. And you cannot buy anything but food or baby supplies. It's a complete win. Mm-hmm. But people heard it, and it was sensationalized. Oh, you're giving money to migrants. They only get $13 a day for the three meals. It's a winning program.
Ola Yemi, is it a win?
It's not that I have a problem with it. It's that, again, the sensationalism has a lot to do with the fact that you got up and declared that we have this migrant crisis. And I thought it was interesting, your earlier point about the difference between how Ukrainian migrants are being received versus migrants, black and Latino migrants. Because, again, you gave a town hall where you were the one who gave this speech and you incentivized New Yorkers to feel this way.
Feel which way?
this feel like there is a migrant crisis where the migrants are being treated differently than them, where they're getting resources that the migrants are getting resources that are not being given to them because you were the one who presented it to the city that you had to cut budgets across because of the migrant crisis, even though recently you decided that you all actually do have the money to handle the migrant issue. That just wasn't publicized as much. No, so this goes back to
sister,
my original discussion.
You know, sister, you're an attorney, and I'm amazed. I think your art is, I'm just going to throw it out there and make people feel
Mayor
that
Adams,
way
before you say it, there's an entire council that knows you're lying.
Sister, let me, we still don't have the money for the migrants. We're spending $12 billion in 3 years, $4 billion already. What I said to New Yorkers at that town hall, this issue will destroy our city. This issue.
You called specific countries. I remember you calling the countries that the migrants were from. They weren't the Ukrainian migrants. You weren't talking about them.
So what happens when we don't have...
Hold on, sister. I did not call the countries where they were from. I went to the country.
It's on video,
I went to
Mayor
Adams. I went to Ecuador, Colombia, Mexico to get a full understanding of the flow. I went to the southern border. Just as I went to those brothers in Burger King, I went to the southern border to understand the problem.
I remember you started that tour before you were going to go to D.C. and when you were going to go to D.C. to talk to Joe Biden about the migrant crisis, but you were stopped because the FBI had to take your phones.
Good Lord, you just make up stuff.
Did I make that up? That's reported.
Sister,
the FBI didn't seize your phones?
Sister.
The FBI didn't seize your phones?
No.
But they didn't investigate your top aides. That's not happening.
What did you just say? Mm-hmm. I remember the tour that you went on
when you were going to the border.
And when did I come back? I came back because somebody had to take my phone?
Because it stopped. I said, I remember on the day of, I remember it because it was
reported. But you got amnesia.
Oh, me and the news. Me and the media.
No.
Your phones weren't seized.
This is important. I want you to understand. I want you to understand the hypocrisy of people. When the law enforcement does something every day, it's bad. But when they do something against Eric Adams, oh, it's good.
I said what happened. Okay. I didn't say that it was good. I don't think it's good that our mayor is being investigated for illegal campaigns.
I came back because of not that they had to take my phones. Mm. That is not true. And you should.
I said it happened that day.
No, it did not happen that day.
I said it was reported before you were going that you were on your way to D.C. Yes, it was, Mayor Adams.
It was reported wrong.
Were your phone? Did the FBI seize your phone? Did they search your top aides?
Not that day.
Did they search the home of several people? Okay.
Yes.
That's what I said. And I didn't say that was a good thing. I don't think it's good that our mayor is being investigated by the FBI.
So, ma'am, so what happens when New York City doesn't have the money for migrants? And then, you know, the migrants are in this city. And they probably have to do what most poor people have to do, which is sometimes resort to crime.
Right.
How is that going to make the city safe?
Right. And that's part of the problem. Imagine having a group of people 18 to 24 years old and being told you can't do anything all day. Mm. When you go to these HERCs and you're seeing these young people and I walk in and I talk with them, some of them come from West Africa, South America, Central America. All they're saying is, man, we just want to work. We don't want to sit around here all day and not do anything. That is why the real focus should be on our national government that's saying, why are you doing this to New York? Check out what they're doing. They're doing it to New York. They're doing it to Chicago. They're doing it to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. They're doing it to Houston. What is the same in all those cities? All black mayors.
Mm.
All black mayors. And so what we're saying, same thing that I'm going through here, my brother Johnson is going through. My sister Bass is going through. My brother Turner is going through. So our folks, what they wanted to happen, Governor Abbott wanted to happen, we're going to turn these cities against their mayors. We're going to create this environment where they're all going to go against their mayors. Go Google what they're doing to my brother in Chicago. Go Google what they're doing to sister Bass. So the cities have now turned against these black mayors that are making real change for the first time.
By over-policing black people.
And they're using this to say, okay, these black mayors are not competent. They can't run their cities. Mm. They're getting everything to the migrants and asylum seekers. This was a perfectly executed plan that we are buying into.
To make black mayors look bad across
exactly.
the country.
Mm. And when we're doing just the opposite. I inherited a city that was in disarray. Disarray. You know, and you, no matter how much you do your analysis, you got to walk away with this brother got more private sector jobs in the history of the city. We reached that point. This brother had his bond rating increased.
40% increase in crime when I came in. We're now dropped those crimes. 13,000 guns removed off our city. Outpacing the state in reading and writing for our children in the public schools, school system. 62 million tourists are back here. More housing vouchers. You go down the list, invest in NYCHA. You go down the list, you're seeing a brother that managed the city that people said was unmanageable. And we did it in 2 years and 3 months.
This is my last question. Do you believe the Biden administration's border policies have fueled the worst border crisis in U.S. history?
In New York, you said New York history or in American history?
I'll leave it at New York. New York history.
I think it definitely impacts us. But I think it's an accumulation of what the White House is failing to do and the Republican-led Congress is failing to do and other administrations. Mm-hmm. People don't want to deal with the fact that we need real immigration reform. Now, let me tell you what this should look like. Do you know right here in our country where we are decreasing in population in many cities? We're hurting for people in many cities. When people come across the border, the national government should say, you're going to go to this city where we need populations. Stay there for 3 years, and then you can go anywhere you want in the country. We need to use this crisis as an opportunity. Our cities are hurting. In Kentucky, they're hurting for backstretch workers in the racing industry. We should be saying, you want to come here? You're going to go to Kentucky. You're going to stay for 3 years. You're going to learn how to be in the country and work. That's how we should do it, instead of just saying, go wherever you want. And allowing this to be politicized by the governor of Texas and say, we're going to hurt Chicago, hurt New York, hurt Los Angeles, hurt Philadelphia. We just got a sister who's was the elected mayor. The day she was being sworn in, a plane of migrants were coming in.
Wow.
None was coming before.
Wow.
No migrants was going to Los Angeles until Bass became mayor. When the first female black mayor became mayor, when she became mayor, they said, let's start sending them to Los Angeles. They playing us, man. They playing us. Wow. You know that?
I respect any elected official who can come have this conversation, because these are the tough questions. From your constituents.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know,
what can y'all do to work together?
we should.
Yeah.
Because no matter.
Because both of y'all care.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know what's interesting? You said that, because when I was in, I'm in rooms with folks, and I walk out of those rooms, and I say, you know what? We both disagree, but we both love the city and love our people. We have to separate the 10% of disagreement and focus on the 90% that we agree in. You agree that our children should be educated. You agree that our brothers, when they get out of Rikers, should come out better than what they went in. You agree that we should be saved. You agree that no mother should have to lose their child to over policing or to someone who is discharging a gun. We agree on many things. The 10% that we don't agree on, then listen, let's debate that. But there's 90% of the stuff. We agree that black women should be able to go through their school system and get into some of these employments, like first mayor in history that have 5 women deputy mayors. First mayor in history, Dominican, Filipino, African-American, Trinidadian, you know, first mayor in history that has a person of color. That's the police commissioner, correction commissioner. First mayor in history that have done so many things. I know retrospectively I'm going to be appreciated as a mayor that lived up to what I said I was going to do. I'm not going to do that now. You know, people always crap on us when we're in the ring. But when my gloves are hung up, people are going to look at, let's say that was an authentic, ball-headed, earring-wearing brother that did his thing as the mayor of the city of New York. The most important city on the globe is being run by a person who was dyslexic, arrested, rejected, and now I'm elected to be the mayor of the city.
Well, there you have it. It's Mayor Eric Adams.
Olayemi Olorin.
It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Wake that ass up
early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're looking for the most epic place on earth, let's start at the base of a massive waterfall. Then trek through the thick jungle. then climb to the peak of a snowy mountaintop. Then once you get there, keep going. Because with intelligent 4x4 and 7 drive modes and a Nissan Pathfinder, the search is the real adventure.
Available feature. Intelligent 4x4 cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.